It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. Good to see my friend and show host, Mike Ward.
Glad to be here, Sean. Listen, I'm just glad to be here with you because the trip
You were worried about me.
The trip you went on, I was worried I wouldn't get to see you maybe ever again.
See, you worry too much.
Yeah, I'm like your mama.
Yeah, you're like
only I'm your daddy.
Yeah, well, here's the issue. You also know this about those of us that like to hunt ducks.
We are crazy,
and the worse the weather is, the more excited we get. So, therefore, I brought in counsel, and I brought somebody on my side,
Mike. And you need it.
And you know this voice, you know this name, and wow, getting this man in studio. The legendary Don Dubuque joins us. Good to see you, Don.
Hey, good to be here, guys.
See, am I crazy? Weather gets bad, we go duck hunting.
Yeah, I'm crazy, but I got a limit on my crazy. Okay.
He don't. That's the problem.
Hey,
a blizzard's coming, and there's going to be ice and
sleet. Yeah, but the ducks.
And, there might be some ducks up there, maybe.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, but you're going to go find out. Well,
that's the thing. Listen,
I'm just glad you made it home.
It's a lot
safer.
It's a lot safer now. I mean, and we got out before it got too icy up there. But it is, you talk about, I am going into old man mode versus all the time I spent in boats and dragging pirogues around and all that stuff to pull up in a Polaris and unload, you know, the three bags of decoys and all the stuff it takes to kill a duck these days. It's a little easier.
Yeah.
I'm blind right there. So, I mean, Don, I have gone a little lazy.
Hypothermia is no fun, though.
No.
I promise you. Promise you.
Y'all
sounds like a man
there's no
that knows.
Cure.
Y'all go ahead and put that on a throw pillow out there. Hypothermia is no fun.
Yeah.
And, Don, I'm thinking about this. Mike and I talked before you got in here, and we've been doing this a long time. Mike was doing it well before me on TV and radio, but we don't have you beat. How many years have you been doing just outdoors with Don Dubuque, the radio show?
Radio show 41. Total. Network 37.
Don't beat that one.
No, you don't. We've been doing a long time. We haven't been doing that kind of long
time. I think it's the longest running outdoor show in the country.
That's awesome, Don.
Yeah.
That really is.
Yeah, and I was thinking about the way this started. You and I talked one day. We're quail hunting on the farm, and we talked about this. But kind of give me the version of how you got into this.
Well, I was driving by a country radio station in 1984. It was WARB. It was a 250-watt AM radio station. And something in my head told me, pull in there and talk to the station manager because I think an outdoor show would go good in this area here in St.
Sure.
Tammany Parish,
Louisiana. You think in St. Tammany? Yeah.
It had to be. So I pulled in and I talked to him. And, you know, he didn't, like most people in the media, they know nothing about the outdoors. They don't know how valuable it is.
They don't know
what the participation level is. I've had to sell station managers all my life on the popularity of it.
Sure.
Well, so I walk in here and I'm telling him about it. And he said, well, I don't know. He says, let me talk to my salespeople and I'll let you know. 3 days later, he calls me back. He says, Don, he says, we got a spot for you. My salespeople said they can sell some sponsors on it, and we're going to give you the best time on this radio station. I said, what is that? He said, it's Fridays at 5:15. It follows the most popular show we have. I said, what is that? He says, Swap Shop. Remember Tradio Swap, where people call up?
That was a big deal.
I got feeder pigs for sale, and I got
a trade toaster for some kittens or something like that. Yeah.
I had 15 minutes following the most important show on the station, and I sat down there, didn't know nothing. I didn't even realize that things were taped on radio. I thought everybody stepped up in front of a microphone and all radio was live.
Right.
I had no clue back then. And I got through the first week, and it grew a little more, and it gave me more time, and I went to a bigger station, and I finally realized if I'm going to make this go, I need to set up a network. I set up a network, and then my flagship station, which was the big monster over New Orleans, WWL, they finally came to me and said, look, we're tired. We can't beat you. We want to join you. We'll be an affiliate or flagship, and that sealed the deal. And that was 30 years ago.
I've been there
ever since.
So. You know, and being on WWL with the way AM bounces and carries, not only was Don heard, you know, from Mobile, Pascagoula, Biloxi, New Orleans over the Lake Charles, you were heard.
38 states.
Yeah, 38 states.
38 states. But now that's not so important.
No, but back then
streaming.
It was.
There was no stream.
No, I streamed things. But I used to lay in bed as a kid and hear stuff on the bounce from everywhere on AM.
Sure. I did the same thing. Yeah. I used to listen to St. Louis Cardinals baseball on KMOX.
Yes.
Yeah.
and so, not only were you talking, you know, to folks right there in the greater New Orleans area, but you're talking to people all over the country.
Yeah. Yeah, and people move away. People happen to pick it up. They followed it when it was a clear channel signal on 870, and then they've gone to the live stream and all the stations that carry it. You know, everybody streams their website, so they've got a streaming service. So it's not as critical as it was, but it's funny because now I meet people, grown men, who will tell me, you know, I was 6 or 7 years old, and I used to ride in the truck with my daddy, listen to you on the way to go fishing. Now they've got their own 6 and 7 year old kids.
Yeah.
It's a generational thing.
That's right.
This is going to complete 5 decades of radio. I was on in the 80s, the 90s, the zeros, the teens, and now the 20s.
That's amazing. It really is. You know, I have friends of mine tell me all the time, really, that they get up and they listen to you early Saturday morning, and then we come on.
wait a second. Yeah, wait a second.
Yeah, and then we come on.
The biggest compliment I get from
And they don't even hunt or fish.
That's
the amazing thing is they tell me that. They listen to all this. They love listening to you, but they don't hunt or fish.
They've got non-hands-on knowledge. They know everything about hunting and fishing because they've been listening to me for so long, but they've never done it.
Yeah. But you know, it arms them to be able to live where we all live. You live along the Gulf Coast, even if you don't hunt and fish, you're going to go to a dinner party, and folks like the three of us are going to be talking about that,
right.
So you need to know a little something to be able to interject something. And I think about the changes over that time. And we could talk about the technical changes.
Mm-hmm.
But what you were talking about, from those early days, that 15 minutes to where you have been now, subject matter change at all? More about this, less about that?
When I first started doing this, I'm sure you remember a guy named Gritz Gresham.
Absolutely. Sure.
Gritz Gresham, I met him through the Louisiana Outdoor Writers Association. I joined, became a member, and I'll never forget the words he told me. He was kind of on the edge. He was going out, and he said, Don, he says, things are going to be different for you young guys coming up. He said, with us, it was all about hooks and bullets, how to, where to. Mm-hmm. He says, you're going to be talking about issues. You're going to be dealing with anti-hunters. You're going to be dealing with the political aspects of it. And, boy, was he right. And
yes,
I had
was.
To get into that. And a lot of my information has changed on – we're talking about the duck crisis, Menhaden industry, what they've done to the thing. People are fighting over the resources. You got management techniques now that have never been implemented before because of technology. And it has really changed a lot of what I used to talk about. But I still like to do a lot of that, too. You know, what's your favorite snack when you go? You know,
I love that
kind of thing.
No, but you talk about that, and we all have our issues that we're talking about around the outdoors. Louisiana's got a lot of them, right, with coastal erosion. I mean, just the amount of time I've heard y'all and the Menhaden issue. But, I mean, you talk about diversion versus non-diversion, all that. And, I mean, I've listened to your show over the years, and I'm interested in it. But, I mean, this is front door politics for people, you know, that hunt and fish in Louisiana.
Absolutely.
And they all have an opinion, Don.
Right. And there's so many varied opinions. You know, we've got so many. Well, you do, too. We got shrimpers. We got crabbers. You know, we got duck hunters that like the freshwater. We got people that want
netters.
The saltwater in
netters.
Closer. They want to catch speckled trout right in the ponds in New Orleans. And that's happening now with the way the coast is being eaten up. So there's just so much more. And then when you get into North Louisiana, it's just like the difference between South Alabama and North Alabama. It's totally different areas. Yeah.
Yeah, you get somebody from Monroe and introduce them from somebody down in Plaquemines, and are they in the same state? Well, geographically, yes, but that's about
it. So you want to go catch some sockeye, and they say, what? Oh, crappie, okay, white perch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the best one. If you wanted to find the South, the region, I'd love to see one of those maps be, like, where folks say crappie, where people say white perch, and sockeye is going to be Louisiana, but not all Louisiana.
No.
And then there's a little bit of influence from Louisiana over here. Some people over here call them sockeye.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and then specks in Florida. They call them specks.
Right.
Specs. Yeah.
But not speckled trout. They're talking about white perch and black crappie.
Ling, crab eaters, lemon fish. What's the other one? There's a couple more. But anyway, all different varieties.
But you could pick out, it used to be, you could pick out the where they're from by what they call different fish.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look at this evolution here. You talk about streaming and all that. It is also different because instead of I've been doing this a long time, not 41 years, we're going to talk about all this stuff on one-hour, one-two-hour, three-hour show once a week. Today, they've been talking about it on social media all week. You walk into your show, and we walk into our show, these conversations have been happening. It's not like, okay, now here's a brand new subject. We're saying, hey, here's what everybody's arguing about on Facebook, you know?
Well, the other thing, too, is people have become, I don't know, there's more animosity out there, and I'm sure you see it. Mm-hmm. Used to be you could discuss differences of opinion calmly. You could take phone calls, and you both just give your side of an opinion. Some people would learn. Some people might concede. Now, they want to kill you. I mean, it's serious out there.
Yep, you're right.
Yep, very much so. I mean, and that is like not just in politics. It's in the outdoors. You know, it's definitely made its way through. I got to think about some of the benchmarks, too, of your show. The radio show, 41 years. We wouldn't have this thing that is, like, I think most people hunting fish along the Gulf Coast know about Bad Boys of the Outdoors because this cop show was popular. Don said, let me tell you, I don't know exactly how, here's what I thought. Don probably said, yeah, that cop show is popular. Half the nation's watching it on a given night. Let's see what happens when we put them in the outdoors. How did that come
up? It's the most popular feature on the station. If I don't do a Bad Boys at the certain time that normally it is, people want to know, did I miss it? Did I sleep late? Yeah. But that's exactly what it is. People love to hear bad guys, crooks come to justice.
Yep.
They love to hear
them.
If somebody's,
car thief for everybody, but in the outdours, you talk
especially about especially the outdoors. You know, that's my ducks. That's my fish. And you're out there and you use an illegal means to do it. And when people hear them being brought to justice, they appreciate
to kill
it.
12 love, limits or whatever.
Hunting at night, you know.
Yeah.
The most despicable stuff you can find.
Was it ever hard to find somebody for each week?
Oh, no. The hard part was find which one am I going to use?
What's the worst one?
Wait, listen, I mean, I've always wondered that. I said, did Don have to really search for this, or was it easy pickings to find his bad boy for that week?
It's a choice. You know, some states, they don't want to give the name and the age of the perpetrator. They'll tell you the case. Florida doesn't give me any names, so I don't do Florida bad boys.
Well, no. So there's no Florida man bad boy?
No.
All right, coming right back with the legendary Don Dubuque right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and our guest, the legendary Don Dubuque. And I guess what they call in the business, I buried the lead because it's too fun to talk to Don. And he's in here, finally got him in here at the end of this 41-year career. So you are hanging up the headphones.
Yep, but not the shotgun and the fishing pole or the rifle. I'll still be toting those.
My man.
It's just time. There's a lot of things I want to do. I want to do some traveling. And, of course, my job, people say, well, you're hunting fish anyway for a living. Mm-hmm. But it's different. You know that. I mean, when you got deadlines to meet.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out and doing TV, you gotta have certain shots. You got to make sure this one's taken care of, that's taken care of. And it's just not the same as when you're doing it for fun.
So you did the radio show, but you also did TV,
I've done a lot of TV. Mm-hmm. On the biggest station in New Orleans, I did a minute and a half. Fish and Game Report for years on that station. Now I've started 7 years ago a 30-minute show called Bayou Wild TV. That is going to continue.
It is okay.
Because,
it is continuing.
Yeah, my partner is going to basically buy me out of it, and I'll be acting as a consultant over this year, and then just turn the reins completely over to him.
But you go with him sometimes, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, well, I'll make an appearance now.
That's right.
Yeah,
with special appearance every week by Don, especially if we're going somewhere good.
Yeah,
exactly. Those Alaska trips were really nice.
You do the Alaska trips. And you do like a bird hunting trip, like a
South
pheasant.
Dakota.
Yeah, South Dakota trip. So, I mean, you were doing that. You know, you had the radio show, but you were also putting together listeners of the show.
It was almost like
a
little travel agency thing. We'd invite the listeners to go. We'd get a special deal from the outfit on a group of us coonasses or Cajuns from Louisiana. We'd go invade these places, so we called it Cajun Invasions.
How about that? That's awesome.
Well, you could do a redneck invasion.
Yeah, exactly. Everywhere I go is a redneck invasion with me. But, you look at this, too, and Mike and I have talked about it before, and I hadn't done a lot of guided hunts in my life, done a few. And it takes, I think, even with the internet out there and reviews, it takes knowing someone who tells you these folks are okay.
Oh, yeah.
And not just, I mean, people want to know, do they have birds, they have deer, they have those things, but are they on the up and up? Are the guides, do they show up? Are the guides, you know, doing what they say they're going to do? Is there gun safety? I mean, those kind of things. You can read a review, but when you have somebody goes, I've been there. These guys are good.
Right.
It means a lot.
Yeah.
Especially and going so far away from home.
It made my job so much easier, too. I mean, you know, that way I step off the boat and that's their boat, you know. Mm-hmm. And they clean the fish, and I go back and edit, you know.
Right.
And because if you had to be out there and stay on top of them, those fishing guys are out there, you know, 3-4, sometimes more days a week, so they know the patterns, they know where to find them, and it makes your job so much easier. And I've been fortunate to have a lot of people. I mean, what other job can you have where your phone rings all week long, people offering you to come out and hunt and fish with their places, professional guides?
Yeah, I made a mistake just doing regular radio. I know that because, Don's going, oh, you know, I've got this guy and that guy. I got to ask you that, too. Your favorite, and I know it's hard, it's like picking favorite children or whatever, but in Louisiana, let's just keep it in Louisiana, your favorite kind of hunting and then favorite fishing. And you can have like a close runner-up, because I know sometimes it's hard. So your favorite hunting in Louisiana?
Boy, that's a close one. It would have to be a tie between bird hunting with my dogs, hunting pheasant, quail, or woodcock, and turkey hunting. I'm a passionate turkey hunter. You understand all about that. Now, you go crazy.
Yeah.
You know, people that don't sleep, and, you know, they'll forsake the wife, the family, the job, and they'll lie, cheat, steal, or kill a turkey.
Sure.
But as far as fishing, I like it really simple. You know, just a little jig pole, maybe catching brim, catching those crappie, white perch, and then on the saltwater side, topwater speckled trout.
That's
when
pretty
they
good
blow
stuff.
Blow up on it. Yeah, that's got to be it.
It's, you know, and it's a state that truly, sportsman's paradise. He had a big basket to choose from and things to do down there.
Did you do any offshore fishing much?
Oh, yeah. I enjoy offshore fishing, but I don't want a steady diet of it. It beats you up. But catching those yellowfin tuna, going out and get a boatload of snapper, but that's bouncing, and it's all day, and you know, you get people seasick throwing up around you and stuff. It's not the most enjoyable, but I do enjoy that, too.
Well, you know, I mean, I grew up doing a lot of offshore. Mike's been doing it since I was watching him as a kid doing it. And we bounced around so much that both of us are supposed to be like, I think Doc said 6'2", 6'3". We got compressed into 5'9", 5'10".
I have, that's for sure.
You know, over the years of it. Yeah, I still enjoy it too, but you're right. I used to be able to bounce all day in the Gulf, come back and sleep, or sleep on a boat and do it the next day, and then like make work on Monday. About a day, and then I'm going to need a little recovery for the knees and back and all that, unless it's slick.
Well, yeah. Weather makes a difference.
And
no
it's hard to
about
plan
it.
With the weather.
Yeah,
you know
it is. And even if you plan, it all looks good. It don't matter, especially in the summertime. You get those bad thunderstorms. They can't predict those, and you get out in it, and it's rough, and you just fish. Whatever it is, you just end up fishing in it, you know? It's not what I want to do, and I can't plan the weather to be perfect, but I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter.
You know, you mentioned this, like people think it's just all hunting, but what's a part of the job that people don't know as they listen to you and they go, Don, I picture Don's life is like this. Is it the editing? What do they not know?
The sales. You know, I was the administration. I was the sales department. I was the traffic department.
Bottle washer.
I did it all. And getting proposals. And one day I might be sitting across from some ad agency's executives. And the next day I'm out there with Joe Redneck. And we're out there trying to scrape up a bird or two. So it's a lot of variety in it. And it takes just a lot of ability to do different things. I don't want to brag, but I mean, there's not many people that have the knowledge, a lifetime of knowledge of hunting and fishing that I do. But at the same time, because in another life, that's what I did. I did sales, and I was trained in sales. Now, the radio, TV, that was all trial and error. I didn't know what I was doing in that and just kind of stumbled in through the back door and got lucky.
But if you can sell, the rest of it can come easy.
That's where it all starts.
Yeah.
Did you do your own editing on everything, on the TV shows?
No,
you
not
had
on
people
the TV.
Help you
I
that.
Would write script. The way I would do the features, that I'd go out with a cameraman, we'd fish, and then you get to know, you know, what's a good sound bite, how to generate sound bites, how to get them out of other people. Then I'd go back to the studio, I'd look at all the footage that I had, I'd write a script, and I'd call the editor in to actually do the physical part of putting the pictures to the words.
Yeah.
But I've never been a trained editor. That's a whole nother ball
it
game.
Is.
And I've got a guy, Chris Lecoq, who is just the best I've ever worked with on Bayou Wild TV. He's superlative.
You know what's amazing is the barriers to entry are less. Now, there's more competition than 41 years ago or 30 years ago for Mike and I. But the barrier to entry, I look at these kids that are doing YouTube channels. And I'm like, people always say they were born too late. I said I was born too early because there's kids. What I did as a kid, fished every piece of water in the city of Mobile, some that I was allowed on, some that I wasn't. There's kids that just go out and do it. They're fishing ditches, they're fishing ponds and all that, and they've got all these subscribers on YouTube. They learn a little bit of editing, and they can get the software and get better cameras, and they're just doing the stuff we regularly did as a kid. I mean, go
but
run
I don't
crawfish
know how
traps.
Much money they're making doing it. You know, it's the one. Some of the ones I've talked to, it's a real struggle.
Yeah.
Because there is so much of it. There's so much saturation out
right.
there.
Right. They got a lot more competition, but the, you know, the gate holders like it used to be. I mean, it only because that person said yes at that station all those years ago.
Right.
Did you get in? You couldn't just say, "Well, I'm Don Dubuque and I'm doing a show." Well, you don't have a radio station. What
are
right. you doing? You
know? Right. Well, the TV aspect of it, too, you know, the equipment has changed so much. You know, we all got cell phones, you mm-hmm. know, and that shoots pretty good video. If you
yeah,
turn it sideways, you can actually
ones.
Put it on TV. Well, when I first started in TV, the guy had to be in pretty good shape because he had about a 40-pound camera that
That's
cost
right.
$4,000.
Right, and if you told him, hey, I'm going to take it, we're going to walk back in the marsh to this pothole. No, we're not.
It's a true story. I'm going to film a goose hunt out in Lake Charles area, and we're driving with my cameraman from New Orleans through Baton Rouge. We get in a traffic jam on I-10. Our van gets hit from the rear end.
Oh.
He calls the station to tell them we've been in an accident. What's the first thing they say? Not,
Damn
are
it.
You okay? No, is no. Don okay? Is the camera okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we need to send life flight for the camera? To heck with y'all. Y'all can lay by the side of the road out there. You know,
and film it. We need it.
Yeah, we need some live action.
But you know what
film.
I think is at a loss with modern day outdoor coverage is the journalism aspect of it. The beauty, the mood. It's now it's to get views, to get hits.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing some crazy stuff. You know, the crazier you are, the more people
sure.
are going to look at it. And I think the real purest part of what is so integral to the outdoors is kind of been lost. Sunsets, sunrises, companionship, camaraderie. You don't see that with the YouTubers, the young YouTubers.
You
it's
don't,
all
but
about,
the,
this, we're going to slap this together. Look at this. You know, it's funny.
No, you're right. You're right. But, you know, like everything leaves a vacuum because I've seen some and there's some out there like what Ranella does with Meat Eater and some of those other groups that have taken that void that you absolutely are spot on and fill it in by doing a – they have hunts where they don't kill anything.
Yeah.
They spend a lot of time talking about how they figure out where they're – I mean, they're – and they're – maybe they're – you know, it used to be you had to go to a far-flung location to get a – in Gresham's time, you had to go to whatever ranch in Texas or you had to go to the North Country or do something to get attention. But they go places that somebody possibly could go out west, but they – even if they don't kill anything, you learn, okay, here's why we went here. Here's why we set up our – glass and spot here, you know, like that part of it and a lot of the scenery you're talking about. So maybe you're spot on with the way some of these shows are, but maybe it leaves a void that can be filled in by somebody who just says
maybe it'll come back. Maybe
right?
people will recognize, you know, what is good outdoor coverage and it'll spawn more people doing it.
For sure. Okay. So going forward, we will see you with the rod in your hand, the gun in your hand.
Yeah.
If we happen to upon you, but
it's or by you Wild TV.
Which you can
YouTube
also get on,
channel.
Yeah,
you can see it on YouTube.
That's where I watch it, yeah. So you can get it there, and it's still okay for somebody to call you who wants to you to come catch a bunch of speckled trout or go?
I'll think about it, but probably they could talk me into it if they twisted my arm or if they want to take me quail hunting on their place that's got a few coveys. You know, we're
yeah.
going to do that, go kill a turkey now and then. You know,
he's now working the turkey thing. Let's get the quail killed, then we'll talk about turkey. But absolutely, we will do that and we'll report on it.
So you're living here now?
I'm living halfway between both. I built a home in Robertsdale. I've been there 2 years now. I spend a lot of time here. Sometimes I did the radio show from there. My place in Mandeville is still there, but I'll be putting it up for sale pretty soon and making a permanent move here to Alabama.
Awesome.
He's fixing to be one of us.
Yeah. How about that? Redneck.
Roll yeah. Tide. Well, no, it's not Roll Tide for you guys.
Yeah,
oh,
roll
yeah.
Tide.
Oh, yeah.
Even though the station carries Auburn, I'm a graduate of the University of Alabama, so you're absolutely good with Roll Tide. Don, congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
41 years.
Congratulations.
Thanks for carrying the show. Y'all did a great job. I met a lot of wonderful Alabama people in doing this show.
It's, we appreciate you.
We appreciate you so very, very much. And, yeah, we'll still get him out hunting and be talking about him going forward. All right, coming right back. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. We've sent Don on his soon-to-be retirement way. Next weekend's retirement. Huh?
What a great guy.
Yeah, absolutely great guy.
We'll have him on some more. He's got a million stories he can tell.
Think about that. 41 years doing outdoors radio.
Yeah.
In the state of Louisiana.
And I didn't know he did TV.
Yeah,
John.
The Bayou Wild TV
I
show.
I had no idea. Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to continue. There's going to be Bayou Wild. He'll be on it. But the radio show going away. That just means you're not going to talk for 3 hours every Saturday morning. Oh, yeah, I didn't tell you that one yet.
Oh, I don't know about that. I got rooked in when I did the TV show from 30 minutes to an hour. They rooked us into that, so I don't think you can rook me into 3 hours on the radio.
I tell you what, I mean, it was funny to become friends with this man after all the years watching him on TV, you and Bill Nunnery, and watching those shows. And, gosh, we wanted to – I mean, I've told you the stories of things we used to do because y'all did them.
Oh, yeah, some of them you shouldn't have done.
No.
If I'd have seen you before you left the dock, I would have said, you shouldn't ought to do that, Sean.
Right. We didn't know any better that, you know – the kind of we didn't know how much gas it took to get to the horseshoe rigs back then.
That's right.
But we were going because y'all did.
And when you got back, you didn't have a gallon left.
Well, we didn't actually make it the whole way in. But,
oh, okay. I thought you.
No, they had to come out and bring us gas. But we gone to the horseshoe rigs just like Bill and Mike did. So
yeah, and what size boat?
That point was a 23, a 23 Grady White Seafarer. We did that trip. Now the other trips I did in a 19-foot Starcraft. With an 85 Yamaha, and then I did a lot of other trips, even out front a little bit in a 14-foot Richline with a 20-horsepower Mercury.
Yeah. You know, it's
amazing I'm still here.
It's amazing all of us are still here, Sean. Mm-hmm. Really.
I wanted to go. You couldn't tell me not to go. I didn't have all the stuff, but dang it, I was going to go.
Listen, I say I was been at the dock and said, man, you shouldn't ought to go, but listen, I did those things
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
I did some crazy things back in those days. I had no fear.
No. Nope.
Just like you had no fear.
Nope.
I mean, at one time I had a 19-foot Salty. It was a cathedral hull, and it had a...
Is that like a tri-hull? What's a cathedral?
It's like a tri-hull.
Okay.
You know, and it had kind of like a Boston Whaler, sort of.
Okay.
You know, and it had an inboard outboard, 140 horsepower, and it had 36 gallons of gas. So me and my brother and a couple other guys, we leave Dolphin Island. Pretty day, and we go. I've never been to the oil rigs in Louisiana, but I keep hearing people say, man, there's oil rigs all down
in
Louisiana.
What year is this? What year do you think this is? 70s?
Maybe in the late 70s,
okay.
Somewhere in there.
So you've heard about these oil rigs?
I heard about the oil rigs. You know, there wasn't no oil rigs off Dolphin Island at that time, besides the Exxon rig.
Right.
And be honest with you, at that time, I didn't even know the Exxon rig was out there. So I know Southwest is where
it's
they're
Louisiana,
at. You know, Louisiana's to the Southwest. So we go out there, and we go and go and go, and finally we see this oil rig. We pull up to it. We start fishing. This guy sees us from the oil rig. He comes down, you know, to where he could talk to us. He said, boys, where are y'all from? We said, Mobile, Alabama. He said, wait just a minute. So he runs upstairs.
You know, tell everybody.
And he comes back down. He says, do y'all know that y'all are 86 miles away from Dolphin Island?
Oh, my gosh.
I said, no, we didn't, but I appreciate you telling us that. I didn't realize I was that far.
In other words, don't keep going any further southwest.
Yeah. And
36-gallon tank.
36-gallon tank. I did take an extra 6 gallons. Mm-hmm. I was smart enough to take an extra 6 gallons. Thank goodness I didn't need it. We made it back in. Everything was good. Now, we caught some fish and everything. But when I got back, my gauge was on empty.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, 36 gallons. Now, think about that. In my boat now, if I would leave Dolphin Island and go 86 miles over there, let's just say 90 miles over there, 90 miles back, I'm looking at 180 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I spent 36 gallons to go over there and come back.
You weren't moving as much fiberglass as you are now.
No, but listen, you know, back in those days, there was no weather forecast. There was no nothing.
Nope.
I mean, it was a pretty day. We went over there and we made it back. And that tri-hole, it didn't ride good.
No.
You got in a little 2-foot chop, it beat
you
your brains.
You felt every one of them.
It beat your brains out. You know, just stories like that. I'm sure everybody's got those stories, especially people that, you know, grew up in my era and going bill fishing, going 80 miles, 100 miles an hour with nothing but a compass. And back then, on that boat, that's all I had, too.
Yeah.
I had a
You just knew southwest versus going, we went southwest, we got to turn around and go northeast.
That's right. You know, I had a compass and a VHF.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't have nobody to talk to in the VHF. Wasn't nobody out there.
Right.
But,
right.
but I had one.
Right.
You know, just stories like that. How do you make it through those after year, you know, doing all that, going out in that boat, you know, going 40, 50 miles out all the time in it? You know,
I don't know.
We're not even thinking about it. And I had a 16-foot.
I'm telling you, we were going in a StarCraft, people don't know. It's like a walleye boat.
Yeah.
And but my dad bought this boat, got a deal, and I was I might as well have been in, you know, a Viking, a fishing Viking, 19-foot, and so we decided, you know, we like to trout fish. We hear we're 16 years old, something like that.
Yeah.
I think I was the youngest of the group. I'm by a year younger than everybody. I was probably 15. Let's go to Chandelure. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
We did it. We made it
left
back.
Left off an island.
Yeah. No, we on that one, we went and launched it like Pascagoula or Biloxi or something like that.
Yeah. Because
we did know that that was closer.
Right.
And we ran a heading. We had a Loran back then.
Yeah.
But we ran a heading.
Yeah.
To do that. And we had packed everything in the world. Of course, we didn't have money for regular gas cans. But my buddy, his dad, had just gotten done painting their garage. And they had the big tubs you used to get the exterior paint in.
Yeah.
And we had sat there and we filled those with premix. It's old enough that we had premix in those things. If we'd have had to use them, it'd been bad. We didn't think, we like dusted them out and shook them out. But we didn't realize, you know, oh yeah, gasoline's going to make all that paint come loose inside the. So we had cans full of premix and white paint.
Oh.
And that was our. That was our fuel supply, but we didn't need it. We were good on our, because I carried all the.
Oh, gosh, thank goodness. You'd have never made it back.
Now, we had to been screened. We did say, we'd be talking about this over the decades afterwards. We said we'd take somebody's T-shirt and get another bucket and pour the gas through the T-shirt so the T-shirt would catch the paint flakes and we'd have had the gas. That was a. We didn't think about all that, but yeah, we made it back. You know, we did those. Did those trips, and you are really the reason we did.
Yeah.
It's your fault. So.
It's all my fault.
It's all
I did
fault.
Crazy things, so you did crazy things.
Correct.
Too. You know, but back then, everybody, you know, nobody had any equipment. Back when I was first doing all the saltwater fishing, nobody had anything but a compass and a VHF. Lorans and all that stuff, there was just none of that.
Yeah, that's the nothing. Time difference between the two of us.
Yes.
Because when I came into it, Loran was there.
Yeah, which is good. At least you knew where you were
in
the Gulf.
Within
600-700
yards.
Yeah, no, they were pretty accurate. I used them.
But remember how long it would take? I mean, we snapper fished off Lorans for years, and all the jugs we had with weights, because you'd go, okay, well, here's the number.
Yeah.
I'm not marking anything. Throw the first buoy here.
And then
circling. And so throw another buoy here. I think I see something.
Yeah.
And circle. And circle.
But eventually you'd find it.
Sometimes,
I mean,
we caught a lot of fish because it hadn't been that many people who could find it.
Yeah, Loran C got better as it went on, too. They had faster processors and that kind of stuff that, you know, sometimes you'd get on the early days, you'd get on it and it'd take a little bit for it to, for all the numbers to start
working. Then you like pass, like then it's giving you the number like, oh, we passed it. It didn't catch up in time to.
That's right. But it got better as time went on. You know, I had a 16-foot, it's called a Larson's Shark. It was 16-foot long and 8-foot wide. I mean, you know.
I mean, it's a dang rectangle.
It was a tri-hull boat, too. And every weekend, we would go out and chase the shrimp boats. That's just what we did, went ling fishing and chased the shrimp boats. You know, we go out 15 miles, no shrimp boats. We go 20 miles, no shrimp boats, 30 miles, 40 miles, whatever it was. We'd just keep going.
Until you saw the shrimp boats.
But back then, there were
a lot more shrimp boats.
There was lots of shrimp boats.
Even in the 80s for me and 90s growing up. Yeah, there were a lot more shrimp
lots
boats.
Lots of shrimp boats out there. So we always found the shrimp boats. You know,
just where?
Just matter where. But there again, we had no concept of the weather and how bad it actually could get. I mean, I know now because I've been in those really, really bad situations that, you know, I think I may not make it out of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's got life jackets in. You stand in water up to your knees and another big wave's coming and all that kind of stuff. I've been in all that now. You know, it makes you think. I mean, I'm telling you, one time that I really didn't think we was going to make it through. I really didn't. I thought it was over with, that I think I told you this story before, too. For 2 hours, we were riding in this. I don't know how big the waves are. I'd ride up them in my 25-foot Mako, and I'm still going up them, and then I fall off the other side. And there was about a 300-pound shark that followed us for probably 2 hours.
Yes.
I mean, that was the craziest thing I ever seen. I said, that thing is waiting on us not to make it.
That's right.
He's
already decided y'all are going to be dinner at some point.
I thought that's the way I was going to go. He was going to end up, you know, sooner or later, this boat ain't going to make it anymore, and we're gonna die. You know, that shark's going to get us.
You know, that boat, the 25, the whiz bang,
right,
was, to us growing up, once again, watching you, the biggest thing we'd ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we obviously there were bill fishing boats, but we had never seen, like, a man who had, but, like, it might as well have been, like, some of the biggest ones now. Like, when we saw that boat, we said, would you look at that? There comes Mike Ward. Look at that boat.
Isn't it amazing how that is,
Sean? It was 25 foot. We were like, look at how long that boat is.
Yeah, it's amazing how things have really changed. It would be like getting, you know, a 44
yeah,
something.
100%.
Now you're looking at it, man, that's a big old boat.
Yeah, we
had
not said when that
and it, you're right.
Would show up, it was just like, that thing goes on forever, y'all.
Yeah. I mean, then you know, the Mako came up with then a 28-foot Mako, mm-hmm. and boy, when we saw that, we saw, oh, they can't make them no bigger than
that's
this.
Right.
This is a monster, you know?
And look at it today.
It's crazy how things are gone.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
We're going to run the break and come back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And we come back, something the state's looking for, I think that's pretty good. You're talking about ways to give back. State of Alabama is looking for hunter education instructors. So we're talking about what they're needing, and there's workshops to do this. So if you want to go, okay, I'd like to help out in this, tell you more about that. And HB 254, your rights on a boat, they're talking about it in Montgomery. We'll get to that as well.
Okay.
And by the way, I didn't forget. I mean, we've talked about a bunch of other stuff on the show, but it is still deer season, and still running like crazy where I'm hunting.
Rut is happening.
I mean, it's been
something. Man, I've talked to so many people. They knock them out right now.
And you need the right one to get himself knocked out. But it's been something. By the way, too, we share pictures. You can always do that on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. It's separate than the other page. Go there and drop us a line, drop us a picture, and we'll talk about it. Also, I'm trying to get this story up, or at least a link to the, whatever they call it, like Ballotpedia page. In Montgomery right now, HB 254 in play. And I saw a message the other day from, this came from Representative Shane Stringer, said, proud to share that HB 254 passed out of the House Public Safety Committee. This bill is about protecting constitutional rights on Alabama waterways while ensuring law enforcement has clear, consistent standards. Now, this is a conversation that if you listen to the show I do during the week, Midday Mobile, Sheriff Birch will be on with me, and he supports this bill. And he started talking this summer. He was going to put out like a voter's bill of rights thing for you to keep with you. And it was about what they were talking about with harassing. It happened in South Baldwin, Dog River, people being harassed by Marine police. And listen, I talked about it on the show, and people, I'll tell you, but I mean, I've had people text in that got stopped several times a day, get stopped for safety inspection, just stopped for, you know, whatever. And I mean, some of the stuff was like an impossible no wake standard. You know, I mean, there's certain boats that, I mean, you know, when somebody's being a jerk and somebody's trying to do right.
Sure.
But they were these safety things. And I'll read what this says here. Alabama HB, so House Bill 254, and there's obviously a similar bill they'd reconcile with in the Senate. Alabama House Bill 254, introduced in the 2026 regular session, requires law enforcement to have probable cause, which is a reasonable belief that the state law has been broken, before stopping and boarding any vessel in Alabama waters. So, in other words, the easiest way to say is the kind of rights you have in your truck, in your car. Like, if you're not doing anything wrong, police don't just pull you over.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
They don't say, I'm just pulling you over to check everything in your vehicle.
If you got kids hanging over the bow up there, maybe, or...
Now, on your boat, if you're doing something that's running a big wake in a no-wake zone,
right,
driving erratically, doing the... Yeah, they still...
Right.
They're there for safety, but they can't do the just pull you over and check you. And that's one of the things, too, that, you know, Sheriff Burchett talked about in the summertime, that you had the right also to say no to looking through your hatches. You could hand them. He said he used to keep a duffel bag with all his safety equipment. He said, I'll hand it up to you, and you can look at it. But this, you know, and you think about it, something, if you're in your car and you got pulled over and told that, well, we're just going to search you. Well, what did I do wrong? Well, nothing. We're just here to search. You would say, well, that's infringement on my rights.
Right.
Same thing. There's holding true to this. Now, it won't affect Coast Guard, I don't think, but it's going to affect Marine Police for the state of Alabama, if it's passed. So if you believe in that, you support that, it's HB 254. Call your representatives. And
Won't be able to check your fish?
Yeah, Marine Police can – I don't know if Marine Police checks fish. But,
oh, they do.
Okay. I'm sure they can say, you know, let me see the fish, but they can't stop you to just stop you.
Yeah.
if this passes. I mean, it's not word for word, but okay, it says key details. The purpose is to protect voters by ensuring stops are based on probable cause rather than random checks. It would apply to all vessels in water under the jurisdiction of the state of Alabama. And so, yeah, that's so it's HB 254.
Okay.
So that's out there. I just gotten stories from folks that really had kind of harassing behavior. They got stopped like multiple times a day after they did the check and everything was fine. And they're like,
the same people checking them again,
like kind of harassing.
Yeah, that is harassment. There's no question about that.
And then the other one before we run out of time here, you can see this over at outdooralabama.com, but they posted up this week the Hunter Education Instructor resource page. Prepares qualified individuals to become certified instructors, teach in-person hunter education classes throughout Alabama. So if you're interested in doing this, being one of the instructors, if you go to outdooralabama.com and just you look in there, the news section or what's new section, it'll be up there, but it's a workshop notice. So it says Hunter Education Instructor Certification Workshop is designed to teach instructor candidates the purposes and objectives of teaching the hunter education course. In-class workshop will examine instructor expectations regarding effectively and successfully instructing hunter education courses. There's one of these going on. It'll be Thursday. Yeah, that's the 5th. Yeah, Thursday the 5th. This is the Hunter Safety Education Instructor Certification Workshop. This one up in Northport. Then down in our neck of the woods on February 10th, that's a Tuesday, at the Weeks Bay Reserve over at the Tonsmeyer Center at Weeks Bay Reserve, which is in Fairhope. That is at 5:30. And you would show up. So if you want to teach, you know, which is a good way to give back. We talk about what can we do to make sure our sport, you know, stays like it is, and kids getting their, or even adult, people getting their hunter certification.
And you have to have that.
Yeah. So
a lot of people don't even realize that you have to have a hunter education.
If you were born after January 1st, 1972, I think is the date.
That's right.
Yeah. So, and well, actually, maybe it's later than that for in-state. I had to get it way back because I started hunting out of state.
Yeah.
And that was the cut. So I had to get it in Alabama. And I'd been hunting for a long time, but I had to go sit. And I appreciate the people that are giving us time. So if you want to do that, this is a chance to go through the workshop. So this one, once again, the one in our area is on the 10th on Tuesday at Weeks Bay Reserve, 5:30 in the afternoon. But if you go to outdooralabama.com and see their news tab, it's in there. You can click through if you want to be part of that. So
I think that's a great program.
So there's two of the news items. So HB 254, the voters' rights bill, and it looks like, I mean, it came out of committee. See how it does on the floor. I don't know if there's going to be opposition, but then it's got to go to the Senate. But we'll keep our eyes on this one going forward.
And I don't mind boats, the Coast Guard or the Marine Police or whoever come check my boat or check anything on boat. I mean, as far as I know, I'm always legal.
Right.
You know, I've never done anything that I shouldn't do. So I never mind that. I can understand some people that they think they got two or three fish too many or whatever, they'd have a fit over.
And we're thinking about it. You know, obviously you're not thinking about it more in size and creel limits, but the real complaints came from people just that boat. Mike, I don't know. There's these people that get in boats and they don't go fishing. They just go ride in the boat somewhere without fishing rods. Have you seen these people?
Okay. Then probably those people aggravating other people. Okay. And that's why the Marine Police.
Because they're not fishing.
They're contacting. Okay.
So there you go. But HB 254, and we'll follow this through the legislative session, and we'll do it all again next week. Big thank you for the legendary Don Dubuque retiring after 41 years joining us on today's show.
Great show.